Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Wrecker, if you're listening, buddy, I am not singing this song like you do, pal. Not doing it. In fact, I was going to skip this song, but producer Mike said it's in your contract that it has to be played at midnight on Thursday night, Friday morning. Otherwise, I would have bagged it, but apparently I would be I'd be involved in litigation, and I don't like litigation unless I can charge somebody for it. So I didn't want to get into that. So I agreed to play it, but I'm telling you, Wrecker, I said I would not sing it. Not going to happen. You know, my wife used to sing in the St. Louis Symphony Chorus. Me, I can't carry a tune with two buckets. So no, I'm not singing the Friday song. Brad Young, sitting in for the vacationing Ryan Wrecker. Glad you're with us this evening. And we've been talking about some technology issues, but you know, the elephant in the room is the Trump wall, and I'm going to talk about that for a little bit this evening. But before I get into some, you know, meaty kind of issues, I gotta play this for you. This is not faked. It has not been edited. But there was an episode of a 1950s Western TV series. Never seen this before. It's called Trackdown. And the only thing that's interesting about it is that it starred Robert Culp. And I don't know if you know the name Robert Culp. He was in a show called I Spy in the 60s. I didn't watch it because I wasn't born until 65. But it was the first show. Bill Cosby was on it. Can I even say Bill Cosby on the air now? I don't know. But Bill Cosby was the star and Robert Culp was the co-star. A lot of folks would also know Robert Culp from a show in the 80s. It was popular, called The Greatest American Hero. If you saw him and heard him, you would recognize Robert Culp. Anyway, he was on this TV show in the 50s. Never seen this show before. I guess, you know, our favorite caller, Mike, would like to hear it because he apparently likes The Rifleman. So this is probably a show that's very similar to the Rifleman. But you know what? I want to save this for just a moment because Jerome's been holding for a long time, and I want to get to this clip. It's going to take a little bit of time. But Jerome, I want to hear about you because you called in with some more technology stories.
Oh, me? I have no technology stories, but I can tell you about Robert Culp.
Oh, you can? Okay. What can you tell us about Robert Culp?
Okay. You mentioned he was in the show The Greatest American Hero. Well, he was also one of the, on the show Everybody Loves Raymond, he was, I believe, the dad of the mom on the show, or the wife. I can tell you that much.
Hmm.
And, the Spice Spy showed everybody on together. That was on, like, about 3 years. They actually even had comic books based on the show. And it was, I believe Bill Cosby played a golf pro, or maybe Robert Culp did. But also on the show Greatest American Hero, Stephen J. Canal, you're talking about a cowboy show he was on in the 50s. I believe that's the show that helped him get the role in the 1980s for Greatest American Hero.
Hmm. That's an interesting bit of trivia. Yeah. On I Spy, the setup of the show, I've seen it obviously in reruns. I never saw it in first run, but Bill Cosby was a tennis pro,
okay. And
Robert Culp was, as I recall, Robert Culp was his CIA handler, and they were posing as a tennis pro and a trainer, and then they could go in other countries and they would spy for the Central Intelligence Agency. And it was kind of funny. It was kind of exciting. And it broke one of the big racial barriers in the 60s because it co-starred Bill Cosby. And so it was groundbreaking for its time and rather enjoyable even when I got around to seeing it in the 1970s. But thanks. Hey, Jerome, thanks for calling in and sharing some Robert Culp trivia with us.
Oh, you're welcome. And on The Greatest American, he wrote He Ate Dog Biscuits.
Uh-oh. I think we lost Jerome. What, you know, we talked about technology, that darn technology. But anyway, Jerome, hey, thanks for calling in. Sorry we lost you on that. But we were talking about this show called Trackdown, and it ran from 1957 to 1959. Why am I mentioning this? Because there was one of the episodes of this show, never heard of it, never saw it before today, but it was called The End of the World, and it featured kind of a, oh, I guess you would say a rabble-rousing doomsayer whose name was, hang on, wait for it, his name was Trump. It was the name of this bad guy in this episode, and he scares the town folk, as you'll hear in the clip, by scaring them and telling them that there was evil on the way. And so he thought that the only way to protect the town from evil was to build a wall. That's right. I'm not making this up. So here, without any further ado, is Trackdown from 1957.
I am the only one. Trust me. I can build a wall around your homes that nothing will penetrate.
What do we do? How do we save ourselves?
You ask, how do you build that wall? You ask, and I'm here to tell you.
You're a liar, Trump.
I've done all I can for Talpa.
Figure it's time for me to be moving on. Well, I think you ought to wait.
It's where you and I disagree.
You're under arrest, Trump.
So what we don't know is whether the guy that says you're under arrest, whether that guy was played by Robert Mueller. I don't know. That would be really weird if that, and I don't know that that's the case. Certainly Robert Mueller is old enough. I think he's 102, if I'm right. I could be off a little bit on Robert Mueller's age, but he certainly looks like he's 102. Anyway, that may have been him in it, but you did hear that correctly. He did threaten to arrest Trump for building a wall. And so I don't know whether that was prophetic or pathetic, and I'll leave it up to you to make that distinction. But obviously the elephant in the room at this point is the wall. Now, there's some things about the wall that's going on right now that I think are extremely interesting, because obviously we're at an impasse right now. We don't know at this point how this is going to get resolved. We don't know the circumstances of how the government shutdown is going to be ended. But when we come back from this break, I'm going to play you a clip that talks about whether or not the president can use his emergency powers as the head of the executive branch to build a wall, even if Congress refuses to fund it. That's an interesting topic, and I want to discuss that with you this evening. Brad Young sitting in for Ryan Recker, and we'll dive into that right after this. Welcome back to Camo X, Overnight America. Brad Young sitting in for Ryan Recker. And we're talking about, the elephant in the room, meaning the whole border wall dispute that's got the government shut down. And here's what's interesting. People ask me, am I a Trump supporter? And I'm like, no, I'm a conservative. I'll cheerlead Trump whenever he supports conservative causes. But I can't really say that I'm a big fan of the guy personally. So I am a strong conservative, and when he does conservative things, I will always applaud what he does. But in this instance, here's what's interesting. The guy has been in business his entire life, and so he knows how to negotiate in this regard. What a lot of folks don't understand is what's called leverage, meaning that from a negotiation standpoint, I have something you want, and I'm going to hold that back until I get from you what I want. So it's a trade-off. The legal term for that's called quid pro quo. We've heard that term back in the Bush 41 administration. But at this instance, his quid pro quo here, his leverage is he's keeping the government open to try to make it uncomfortable for the Democrats so that they'll cave and come to his position. They likewise know that if the House Democrats don't approve the funding for the budget, then the president gets no wall. So hence the stalemate. Now, having said that and set that up, I wanted to point out that just breaking this evening, President Trump has said that he will probably, almost definitely, declare a national emergency. So what does that mean? The president is the head of the executive branch, and the president has the power to declare a national emergency. President Obama did it 13 times. All presidents, going back to even Harry S. Truman, Missouri-owned Harry S. Truman, declared national emergency and tried to nationalize the steel industry. So all presidents have done that. And so President Trump is threatening to declare a national emergency for the purpose of building a wall without congressional approval. So I wanted to get a perspective on it. I don't necessarily endorse this perspective. In fact, I've got a lot of concerns about this perspective. But here's Judge Napolitano talking about the problems that Trump may encounter if he tries to utilize his powers to declare a national emergency for the purpose of building the wall.
Let's go to Judge Andrew Napolitano on this and this national emergency issue. How do you prove that case, Judge?
Very difficult for him to do so. The Congress in 1976, in the National Emergency Act, defined an emergency. I'll give you the definition in a minute, because the definition was refined slightly by the courts shortly thereafter. But basically, it means a truly extraordinary state of events, which creates an immediate and a palpable threat to life, property, and safety, and which cannot be addressed by the employment of ordinary government assets or the exercise of ordinary government power. That's a very, very high bar. And even if the emergency is declared, and even if it is not interfered with by the court, it doesn't allow the president to do anything that the Constitution prohibits, and it doesn't permit him to avoid doing anything that the Constitution requires. So what does the Constitution require? It requires that all federal expenditures be authorized by Congress. Question, can the president take money budgeted in column A and move it to column B, where B is not budgeted? Answer, no. Question, can the president spend money that the Congress hasn't authorized? He cannot. Can the president build a fence or a wall or a doghouse on private property without exercising eminent domain authorized by the Congress? Answer, no. So he's pretty much, in my view, on very thin ice if he were to offer the declaration that he talked about the other day outside the White House.
How compelling does the emergency have to be, Judge? In other words, it was fairly self-evident in the middle of the Depression when FDR took over and we were going into a economic and market free fall, that he was going to declare a bank holiday. A lot of people said that's an overreach, but he had the sort of the wind at his back of a national emergency. You could argue the same after 9/11, broad powers that I know you were concerned about that President Bush had used
right
to declare taking sweeping executive action. Those were a bit more obvious, I would think, than something like this, but maybe I missed.
Well, if this is a true emergency, the president's people must first determine how they would address it without the declaration of emergency, because emergency means there's no ordinary means to address it. Is there enough military to go down there and stop people from coming over? Are they still coming over? What happened to the caravan? Where did it go? Well, they're now being housed in Mexico and being processed orderly into the United States. So has the emergency abated? These are the
and
types
the number of illegal crossings is down to a 6-7 year low right now.
Right. So
you can't make that argument.
The
right?
president's going to have to address these tonight, because if he does declare an emergency, you notably challenge them immediately, and the courts will force the Department of Justice lawyers who are representing him to address
this. And when they are forcing him to address it, or they're forced to address it, and he proceeds to, let's say, tomorrow morning, if he declares such an emergency, they start moving on this wall or whatever. Can a judge who slaps it down mean that stops the building?
In my opinion, yes. And in my opinion, it would be stopped almost immediately. It is almost on all fours with what President Truman attempted to do in 1952. We're fighting the Korean War, and the United Steelworkers of America goes on strike. They shut down every steel mill in the United States, and Truman couldn't get military material to troops in the battlefield. He seized the steel mills by executive order. He directed his Secretary of Commerce to hire people to operate the steel mills. Supreme Court stopped him in a week. and said, you can't spend money without Congress authorizing it, and you can't take over private property without Congress authorizing it, no matter what the emergency is. So that's the model for the court's decision. It's an old decision. Well, old for some of us, 1952. But it's still the law, and the president needs to be guided by it.
Well, one of the flaws, and I do like Judge Napolitano, don't get me wrong, and I agree with a lot of things that he says. One area in this point that I disagree with him on is along the following lines. Actually, I've got two or three areas that I disagree with him on. First of all, when he talks about that the president doesn't have the power to do that, and he gives President Truman's example of the confiscation of the steel mills as an example. The problem with that as an example is that since that time, and in the 1970s, Congress passed legislation giving the president powers to utilize the emergency power of the president. Now, under those rules that were passed in 1970, the president has a specific period of time where he has to, or he or she can act, but then has to report back to Congress. So there's limitations on how long they can do that. So the question becomes, you know, can he go out and build a wall in the amount of time it takes before he has to start reporting that to Congress? And probably not. I mean, I don't think that he could necessarily do it that quickly. In terms of the money, Judge Napolitano talks in great detail about how the president can't spend any money unless he specifically has been authorized to do so by Congress. And yet, if the story that was breaking just before we went on the air this evening was that Trump announced that he's consulted with White House attorneys and consulted with them about using this presidential emergency powers to take unilateral action to construct the wall over the objections of Congress. Now, President Trump claims that his attorneys told him that the action would withstand legal scrutiny, quote, 100%, unquote. Again, I'm not sure about that. But I do think that they're on solid ground to act under the President's War Powers Act that was given to the president in terms of a national emergency and how to respond. So the question about the Judge Napolitano raised about whether the government can determine how the president spends that money, that's a political issue. And one of the things that you see in the Supreme Court many times is that they refuse to get involved in situations that involve an inherent political concern. So when we come back from this break, I'm going to play you a clip from Charles Schumer, from Chuck Schumer, Senator Chuck Schumer from New York, because if you hear what he's saying today, I want to show you and play for you a clip from him from just 2009, where he sounds a lot like President Trump when he's talking about what we need to be doing at the border. And I just question, what's changed from then to now? Has the situation gotten better? Have all the problems been erased? Are we walking in tall cotton and living in the lap of luxury now when it comes to border security? I certainly don't think so. I don't know that we should be shutting down the government to build the wall, but certainly border security is a top priority. When we come back, I'll let you hear from Senator Chuck Schumer from 2009. Thanks for being with me this evening. Brad Young, filling in for Ryan Recker. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Camo X, Brad Young. I'm glad you're with me this evening. Thank you. Thanks for being a part of the Camo X family. And we heard at the top of the show about 11 o'clock, we played the clip that Ryan left that he found from Harry Hamm from the early 1980s, where he was interviewing Christopher Reeve, a.k.a. the first Superman, at least from the movies. And so, yes, the Camo X family has been around for a long time, and I'm glad that you are a part of it. We're talking about the whole border thing, and as I mentioned in the last segment, I agree border security is an issue. We should address it. I'm in favor of it. I don't know that we should be shutting down the government over it, but I certainly agree that it's an issue. I'm just looking at where do we go from this point forward. So what's interesting is that I also read today that in anticipation of declaring a national emergency, because I think that's the only card left that the President Trump has to play, the Pentagon was asked to provide a list of unspent funds, including those earmarked for civil works projects that are part of a disaster recovery. Now, this is the part politically that I think that President Trump hasn't thought this through. Because if he wants to spend money that's currently in the Pentagon budget or in the executive branch budget. He may, in fact, be able to do that. The courts are going to have to decide. But the political fallout from that, I think, could be drastic. And when I say drastic, I mean negative for the president, because the money that he is looking at to build so-called start building the wall is money that has already been designated for disaster recovery in Puerto Rico, in Texas, in California, and in Florida. So in other words, politically, what he would be saying is to these folks in Puerto Rico and Texas and California and Florida, I'm sorry, I know that you've been out of the house for the past 2 years. I know that you were without electricity for 9 months, but I'm sorry, the money we were going to use to help you, we're going to use that now to build a wall on the Texas border. Now, again, do I think that a wall is necessary? I kind of do. But I don't necessarily think we should be shutting down the government to get it. And so when President Trump goes this route, and I think he's going to have to, because there's no indication that Senator Schumer is going to give on the issue, nor is Nancy Pelosi, then at that point, it's going to be more litigation. Now, generally, as an attorney, I'm in favor of litigation. Of course, I'm always in favor when attorneys get paid, very much in favor of that. So, but in this instance, jokes aside, I think it's going to be a difficult time legally to prevail, because there's more that can go wrong than there is that can go right. But here's the part that I find just as fascinating, maybe the most fascinating part of this entire debate and this entire discussion, is how the goalposts have changed. You know, that's a phrase that we hear from football that's applied to life whenever you think that the goal line is at zero. But you know what? Sometimes if we could move it, we could move it to negative 10 or maybe move it to the 20-yard line. That's called moving the goalposts, meaning that the situation changes in terms of what is expected. And so if you hear Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer today, if you hear them talking about border security, you would basically think that they are in favor of open borders, that people can just come over. Now, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she is in favor of open borders. I believe Bernie Sanders is in favor of open borders. Many notable leaders on the left are in favor of open borders. But here's what Chuck Schumer had to say about this issue just as recently as 2009.
We need to set the record straight. The American people need to know that because of our efforts in Congress, our border is far more secure today than it was when we began debating comprehensive reform in 2005. Between 2005 and 2009, a vast amount of progress has been made on our borders and ports of entry. The progress includes 9,000 new Border Patrol field agents in the last 4 years. Construction of a 630-mile border fence, or 630 miles of border fence, that create a significant barrier to illegal immigration on our southern land border.
So you heard Senator Schumer, just as recently as 2009, he didn't have any problem building a border fence that was 630 miles in length, and that was just in 2009. So is the issue, this is what I'm trying to understand, is the issue, well, we just don't want a wall, but we want a fence? Is the issue, we don't want a fence, we want open border? Is the issue, we don't want anything that's physical, we just want drones and agents? No, we don't want ICE agents or Border Patrol agents, because the new Congresswoman from New York, Cortez, she says that ICE agents are evil and they kill people. So I'm just confused about where those goalposts are supposed to be. And we're moving the goalposts. There's lots of clips out there, and I think Ryan has played several of them, where we hear, whether it's President Bill Clinton or whether we hear Hillary Clinton when she was Secretary of State, or whether it's President Obama talking about we have to close the border, we have to stop illegal immigration. Those are all from just a few years ago, and yet today we're not hearing any of that. So that's what's confusing about this issue. It's not a black or white issue. It's not a, are you standing with the president or against him? It's a question of where are the goalposts and what do we want as a policy when it comes to our country. So one of the things that occurred to me was, well, maybe it's a money issue. You know, maybe we're looking at it and the politicians are saying, you know what, we just don't want to spend the $4 billion or $5 billion. And I can't believe that in a $2 trillion or $4 trillion budget that the United States government has, really? $5 billion? I mean, that's not a lot of money. So what I did was, is I went to see what are some of the other things that Congress has funded just this year, in fact. The federal government has spent $4.173 trillion. So the remaining amount for the border wall would be 0.1% of the current annual federal spending. That's all it is. And as I looked, the federal government pays enormous sums of money for the most ridiculous things. I remember one of the most famous ones was that the government paid, and I think the number was $300,000, to study whether men who carry umbrellas look like sissies. So we spent money on that. Yes, Ben, producer Ben, our government, your tax dollars, went to determine whether men who carry umbrellas look like sissies. We spend $8.2 billion a year for a rural utility service, which is supposed to bring electricity to rural communities. Now, last time I checked, most rural communities have electricity. I'm born and raised in a rural community. It's not too far from here, 2 hours from St. Louis. Had electricity there a long time. So what are we spending $8.2 billion a year on a rural utility service for electricity when all these communities have electricity? Nobody seems to be squawking about that. In fact, I was reading just the other day that that amount has gone up. It's been increased to spend money on a program that's really unnecessary. Sugar subsidies. Now, if you take any poll and look at any healthcare professional, America has an obesity problem. And yet right now our government is subsidizing the sugar industry to the tune of $6 billion a year. So if we eliminate the sugar industries, that'd pay for it. But, you know, we're not hearing that kind of analysis, and we're certainly not hearing those kinds of bargaining that's going on, because now it's just all about sticking it to the other guy. That's really where we are. The United Nations, we contribute $10 billion to the UN. I don't know how much of that's a good investment. Amtrak, you know, we spend $10 billion a year on Amtrak. That money could also be used to pay for a wall. And why does the government have to run a railroad? I mean, why can't we sell it, make money, and let private industry run it? If it's feasible, it'll work. If it's not feasible, it'll close. But why does the federal government need to be involved in that? Unused real estate. This goes into the billions and billions and billions of unused real estate that we have that's sitting around. But perhaps the largest area of money that's just being used unwisely is with foreign aid. Did you know that your tax dollars out of your wallet, $50 billion a year, goes to foreign subsidies to other countries? What do we get for that? Do we get help from these countries? Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot. Anytime there's a national crisis, all of these countries that get money for us, they come to the United States support, and they come and support us and cheer us on and tell the rest of the world they support us. That never happens. So I don't know what we get for our $50 billion a year. Can we take just 10% of that to help build a wall? I mean, I tend to think so. So those are the perspectives that I don't hear being discussed in this current issue with regard to the stalemate. Should we be shutting down the government for this? Probably not. Should we have border security? Absolutely. And when we come back, you know, earlier in the evening, we were talking about technology, but I want to mention that. But I'm also going to talk briefly about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, because it's very important that you know what's going on with Justice Ginsburg. Brad Young sitting in for Ryan Recker on Overnight America. Brad Young sitting in for Ryan Recker on Overnight America. Thank you for being with us this evening. About an hour ago, I mentioned that we're going to talk about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and that's important for lots of reasons, but this is what prompted me to want to talk about this evening. Folks know I'm an attorney, and I get all kinds of legal questions all the time, and the first thing I always say is, well, I'm sorry, I need a retainer first before I can answer that. And the folks who think I'm serious don't get the joke, and then others laugh, and hopefully that was your reaction. But in this instance, folks talk to me, and I've had this question asked of me several times just yesterday and the day before and today, Wednesday and Thursday, and that is, Ginsburg is missing time from the Supreme Court. Now, you may recall that she had cancer surgery. She had some polyps, I believe, in her lung, and they had the cancer removed from her lungs. So she's been missing from the Supreme Court. And before we get into some of this analysis, this is from The Hill magazine as they talk about the background of the issue as it applies to Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg will miss a Supreme Court session on Monday for the first time in her more than two decades on the bench. The High Court spokeswoman, Kathy Arberg, said Ginsburg is recovering and working from home after surgery to remove two cancerous nodules from her left lung on December 21st, the Associated Press reported. The nodules were discovered during tests in November to diagnose and treat rib fractures Ginsburg sustained from a fall. The Supreme Court justices are set to convene their first public session of the year to hear arguments in two cases.
So that's the background of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and what's going on. But what's interesting is can she be removed from the Supreme Court? So if that's a question that you have, let me just put your mind at ease for a moment. If that's not going to be an issue. Justices can only be removed from office by impeachment or resignation or by, of course, death, which is how most Supreme Court justices leave the court, is in a casket. So some do resign and others retire. But in this instance, most of the time they serve for their lifetime. So even if Ruth Bader Ginsburg has to stay at home and read transcripts from oral arguments or maybe even watch some, there wouldn't be any video, but she could read transcripts, certainly, and then discuss it with her law clerks. She cannot be removed from office. She could even stay at home and say, you know, I'm going to skip this term and actually I'm going to go to Naples, Florida and take up tennis for the Supreme Court term. I mean, she could do that and she still could not be forcibly removed from the Supreme Court. No one's ever done that. In fact, no one's ever been impeached from the Supreme Court. There have been threats for impeachment. And in fact, I believe Supreme Court Justice Abe Fortas resigned from the Supreme Court. I think it was Abe Fortas in the early 1960s, whenever I think there were some financial problems and he was facing possible impeachment and he resigned, probably in order to keep his pension. But in this instance, no sitting Supreme Court justice has ever been impeached, and nor can Supreme Court Justice Ginsburg be removed from office just because she's recuperating from this particular health problem. But the question becomes, what happens if her health deteriorates? She's been famous to say in the past when she was asked about her health that she would continue to serve on the Supreme Court as long as she had a, quote, full head of steam, unquote. I think that was the quote that she gave. But that was when President Obama was president. And if she thought she was running out of a full head of steam, she could just retire, again, go on the lecture circuit, head down to Naples, Florida. And at that point, President Obama could have picked her replacement. But she makes no secret of the fact that she loathes President Trump. And so would she resign in the event that or would she resign, rather, at this point, knowing that President Trump would replace her with someone who's far more conservative than she is? And the answer to that is probably no. So even with that situation, the story broke today. I think it was Politico that broke the story, that the White House is actually preparing for a possible departure of Justice Ginsburg. Now, they don't have any information. They don't have any knowledge that she's going to be leaving. But the White House, at this point, according to Politico magazine, that they're taking the temperature of possible shortlist candidates, reaching out to key stakeholders and just, you know, making sure that people are informed on the process, said a source familiar with those conversations. Now, here's the thing that's interesting. Given what we just came through with Justice Kavanaugh, how excited would you be if your phone rings and President Trump's on the line? I wish I could do a President Trump impression like everybody else can do, apparently. But how, you know, if he asks you, you know, Producer Ben, I need you to be on the Supreme Court, buddy. I need you to help me out. You know, how would you respond if President Trump asked you to be on the Supreme Court after seeing what Justice Kavanaugh went through? And even before that, Justice Neil Gorsuch, it was very political. And even before that, Merrick Garland, he went through a terrible process. So it has become so politicized that from my perspective, you may have a difficult time filling that shortlist. Now, will someone do it? Absolutely, someone's going to do it because they're going to want to serve on the Supreme Court for life. But I got to tell you, there's going to be folks that President Trump is going to be talking to that's going to say, I don't know that I want to go through the hassle of having my high school yearbooks examined for every word that I may have said. I don't want people asking me if I've ever drank beer when I was in high school. And I don't want people asking me about every date I've ever been on my entire life. But yet that's where we are. And again, the Democrats went through that process with Kavanaugh, but it doesn't shock you or surprise you to know that the next time there's a Democrat president and a Democrat gets nominated to the Supreme Court, that the same thing's going to happen. But that's where we are in the political process. And I have a problem with that. The system has always been political. You know, there's a term now, it's called being borked. And you've probably heard that term. And that comes from Robert Bork, who was nominated by President Reagan. And he was forced off because of his writings and things that he had said publicly. And so now the process of getting someone to withdraw their nomination and to put them through the ringer, as it were, is being called borked. And certainly, Justice Kavanaugh was borked, although I don't know that I would want to use that term with Justice Kavanaugh because he might have a different understanding of what borked means. I don't know how he would interpret that. But in any event, it is a difficult process. And so as I read here that the White House is getting ready to prepare for another bruising confirmation battle should Ginsburg's health take a sudden turn for the worse, I'm just wondering who is he going to get that would fill that slot? Who is he going to get that will agree to be on that short list? I hope and I pray that there will be individuals who will say, yeah, it'll be grueling, but I'll do it because I want to serve on the Supreme Court. I want to have a part in shaping the judicial future of our country and how we move forward as a country from a policy perspective. I hope they could do that. It would be difficult. I'm a squeaky clean guy. I mean, we were talking about marijuana laws recently, and I confessed even I played drums in a rock band, and I've still never smoked marijuana. So there's nothing in my background, but yet I don't know that I would even want that examination process going on. And if that politicization of the Supreme Court is to such a degree that qualified candidates don't want to do it, then we as a nation are going to be harmed by that. I think we've been harmed at the president level for that. I think there are fantastic possible people who could be president, fantastic possible candidates for the presidency who simply don't want to go through the process of the nomination process in our country because of the type of proctological examination that goes on if you run for office. And I think we're seeing now, although it's happened in the presidency for several years, last few elections, we're seeing that now at the Supreme Court level. So if you think it was a challenge for Justice Kavanaugh to get approved, what's it going to be like in this instance whenever Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is the lion on the left, is going to be replaced by someone who's going to be extremely conservative? That fight is going to make the fight over Justice Kavanaugh look like a minor skirmish on a playground, because now they're losing the scion, the lion on the left, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So that's something you can look forward to seeing as the president puts together his short list of candidates. Lindsey Graham was consulted as far as that short list of candidates, and he said that he is helping the president put together a list of nominees. Many of them are women, according to Lindsey Graham. Will that make the process any easier? I don't know, but I certainly hope so. Brad Young, thanks for being with us this evening on Overnight America. Ryan will be back on Monday. Good night.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.